November 30th was the centenary of Oscar Wilde's death. For the past few years leading up to this date, Wilde and his work have been the subject of films and plays, making him a popular cultural rival to Jane Austen, Henry James, and Shakespeare. Now the long-awaited complete letters of Oscar Wilde have been published. Book critic Maureen Corrigan says this volume will make readers even more wild about Wilde.
Further proof that life is unfair. Instead of the one clear month I needed to devote wholly and solely to savoring the complete letters of Oscar Wilde, over 1,500 of them, I could only allow myself a few frenzied hours to race through this garden of epistolary delights. Oh well, even a brush with Wilde elevates the spirits, educates the tongue, and renews a reader's faith in the evolution of the species. This humongous edition of the complete letters of Oscar Wilde, accompanied by his own pen and ink illustrations, was edited by his grandson and Wilde scholar, Merlin Holland, and by Rupert Hart Davis, who edited the only other and much, much slimmer so-called complete collection of Wilde's letters in 1962. I'm sure other Wilde scholars will have their bones to pick with this volume. I've already heard some inside the Academy whispering about publication pressure to put the collection together quickly to observe the centenary of Wilde's death. But to an informed but non-expert Wilde admirer, this collection is a treat. Like Dorothy Parker, Wilde's greatest attribute was his gift for brilliant gab, the off-the-cuff remark that could stun listeners with its eloquence and easy acrobatic wit. One of the most famous, if possibly apocryphal, instances of Wilde's lightning-quick verbal reflexes occurred on his trip to America in 1881, where he was booked to give a series of lectures. Upon arriving in New York, he supposedly said to a customs official, "I have nothing to declare but my genius." Ah, but only a fool would ever accuse Wilde of traveling light. Wilde's poems, essays, novel, and especially his plays give us flashes of that genius. But his letters, often dashed off and scattered, probably offer a reader the closest virtual reality experience of being in Wilde's company and listening to him as one of his zingers floats out of his mouth. The letters here span the years 1868, when Wilde was a 14-year-old schoolboy, to November 21st, 1900, about a week before his death. Given the benefit of hindsight, I think even in that very first letter, Wilde's adult persona is taking shape. He's thanking his mother for sending a jolly hamper of food, but also taking her to task for mistakenly sending him two of his younger brother's shirts. There it is in its pubescent form, the characteristic Wildean felicitous choice of words and the almost obsessive concern with clothes and public presentation. What follows is a postmarked autobiographical narrative of Wilde's life and career. He sends dozens of gracefully sycophantic letters to leading actresses like Ellen Terry, as well as to literary father figures like Matthew Arnold and Walt Whitman. The travelogue account of his lecture tour throughout the United States is a hoot. Wilde enthuses about lecturing to multi-wived Mormons in Salt Lake and smoking cigars down in a silver mine with a rapt audience of miners in Leadville. In an 1882 letter written from Topeka, he moans to a correspondent that the local poet has just called on me with his masterpiece, a sanguinary lyric of 3,000 lines on the Civil War. What am I to do? The letters Wilde wrote to his future wife, Constance Lloyd, are impassioned and touching. So are the letters he wrote to Lord Alfred Douglas, nicknamed Bosie, the ninth-rate poet and feckless young man who would become Wilde's lover and be the instrument of his downfall. By now, Wilde has become such a popular figure that most people know at least the general aspects of his tragic fall from grace. There was the public trial for homosexuality, 2 years hard labor in prison, bankruptcy, the collapse of his marriage and the loss of his two sons, and, after his release from prison, his sad exile to the continent. Even in prison in 1895, Wilde is writing to the unworthy Douglas, "I shall be eternally grateful to you for having always inspired me with adoration and love. Never has any love been greater, more sacred, more beautiful. Above all, Wilde's flamboyant voice, the one that chats, quips, and exults through the complete letters, is the voice we now identify as gay. Every gay character on stage or screen, and many out gay men in life, knowingly or not, speak in Oscar Wilde. It's a dialect that's self-deprecating, fussy, consciously affected, breezy, and very funny. I don't know if Wilde single-handedly invented the language of modern male homosexuality, but he certainly perfected it and carried it on through thick and thin. According to a friend of Wilde's who recorded the scene, when Wilde was released from prison, he was taken to a private house where he greeted a woman by saying, "How marvelous of you to know exactly the right hat to wear at 7 o'clock in the morning to greet a friend who's been away." As his letters demonstrate, even in the worst straits, Wilde was never at a loss for words.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.